How would you know if you're ready to leave that security and go jump into something new?
I will say I don't think you're ever going to feel ready. And it isn't for everybody. If you value the feeling of security that you feel right now, I think you should be happy and content with that. We kind of have this hustle culture in America right now, where if you're not the best at everything, you're not an entrepreneur, you're not a millionaire, you don't have a jillion followers on social media, that you can't be happy. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's a lie. You can be happy with whatever your picture of success is to you.
All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of the Benjamin Saylor Show. We're excited to be here today with Will Anderson.
The Will Anderson.
Oh, nice. The.
Yeah. Will's a good friend of ours. So I'm going to give a little bit of introduction on him. Will went to school in small town New Plymouth.
Oh, wow. And, you went to school in Plymouth?
Destination.
Yeah, graduated from New Plymouth.
Wow. What is their mascot again?
The Pilgrims.
The Pilgrims.
Or Grimms. Go Grimms.
Yes.
So he went to New Plymouth, and then after he graduated, he went into the Air Force, and he was in the Air Force for about a decade, kind of planning on pursuing a career in that direction. And then you completely shifted, right? Left the military, you got into real estate, started selling homes, you worked your way up the corporate ladder and were eventually running $30 million companies. That's incredible. That's awesome that you were able to do that. And now, with all the skills that you have, you're starting your own company now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and your whole kind of growing up and how you got to where you are now?
Yeah. So I grew up super blue collar. My dad was a builder, general contractor. My mom was a medical biologist, worked in the lab downtown Boise. And I had great examples as a kid of hard work, dedication, commitment, and I would just say extremely, you know, they say humble beginnings. You know, I grew up in a 900 square foot house on 7 acres out in the dirt off Sand Hollow Road, which is like, you know, sagebrush.
Yeah,
that's about all that's out there. But really solid upbringing. One of the best gifts my parents gave me was a good self-image, and kind of almost foolishly believed in me as a kid. I didn't have a whole lot of evidence of success as a kid.
Nothing backing it up. You didn't build a good sandcastle on this time. Right. Like, you're going to be a construction guy.
No, wasn't much of a scholar. I did okay in sports, but I wasn't anything in the newspapers, you know. But my parents really sewed into me that I could do whatever I wanted to do. And so I grew up with a really solid foundation, a really great relationship with my parents, and having that example. And so, you know, I went to about a year of college because I thought that's kind of what you were supposed to do, although I never really wanted to pursue that. And the day came where my dad said, you're either going to have to get good grades, because I was not, which was pretty much status quo for me. Either get good grades or go get a job, and it's time for you to, you know, grow up.
After a year in college, you said that?
Yeah.
Was he funding your college, or how do you?
So I actually did have a private scholarship that was paying for school, that was through some just very generous people in my childhood that had offered to pay. So that was also a big part of it, where he's, you know, my dad says, you can't just take advantage of these people. You need to either get good grades and make it worth their investment into you, or go get a job and stop wasting their money. And so, you know, 2007, easiest way to get a job. There was quite a bit of demand for the military. And my dad was a Marine. My brother was already in the Navy. And so I looked at the different branches and decided on the Air Force.
But they were pretty, I mean, I've talked to some young people that are in the military, and they're so like combative about whether you're in the Marines or Navy. Yeah. So how do they feel about that?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's and they all gave me a hard time the whole time I was in the Air Force. Okay. You know, my dad, who he would say, you know, this is my son, Will. He's in the Air Force, which is kind of like the military. He would never like give me credit for it. And but I consulted heavily with all of them. I had an uncle who was a career Army, and my grandfather was career Navy as an officer as well. And I talked to all of them.
Okay.
And it's funny because they all instructed me to join the Air Force. Really? And then continued to give me a hard time about it my whole Air Force career. You're like,
hey, come on. I knew what you said behind.
Yeah. So that's kind of what led me down that path. And I really have always just enjoyed aviation and airplanes. And so, spent years as a airplane mechanic on F-15s. Started out as a jet engine mechanic, did that for 6 years, and then went back to school for welding and machining. And spent an additional 5 years in that. And that last 5 years is really when I started to realize I like business, and got introduced to a mentor of mine through just a happenstance meeting in church one day, and became really good friends with him. And he was the only really successful entrepreneur that I had really known. And so, and he was only a couple years older than me. He and I are very close friends to this day. And I just thought, you know what, here's a guy that grew up in rural Alaska, very similar upbringing to how I grew up in New Plymouth. And he had a very successful real estate team. He had a great like affiliate marketing company. And I thought, how is it that this guy has done so well for himself, grew up just like I did, didn't have a college backing, didn't have a pedigree that said he was, you know, predetermined for success.
Yeah, sir, whatever.
Exactly. And now he's doing these great things, leading these companies, and I'm in the military, you know, going on TDYs and deployments and things and away from my family and not making great money.
Yeah.
And so that kind of opened my eyes to be like, you know what? I think there is more out there. And yeah, he was my first introduction to the business world that said, you know, you should start reading, start investing into your mind. You should start getting around people that have a life that you would want to live, and just really basic, you know, what now today seem like really gee whiz fundamental things to know.
Yeah.
But it was novel to me at the time.
Oh, yeah. And that's the whole thing with this podcast that we want to do, is we want to show people like you, and talk about your upbringing and where you came from. Because I think at the end of the day, when you meet someone successful, you realize they're just another person. There's really, yes, there's special things about them and their knowledge has grown and what they've done, but anyone can get there if they choose to. And this whole podcast, we want to be able to motivate people and help people understand that if you wanted to have this goal, like for instance, the goals that you have, you can do it, right?
Right.
Yeah, and that's, sorry to interrupt. That's one thing I love about your story too, is you didn't come from anything specific. You know, you weren't given wealth growing up. The knowledge you have is the knowledge you took the time to gain.
Right.
No one pushed the knowledge on you. You took it. So when you look at yourself, you're a self-made man, and you are who you've become. And that's exactly what Sailor was saying, is there are so many people out there who don't even know that it is possible to become someone like you in their situation and take control of your life and learn and grow.
Yeah.
And it's awesome you met that mentor who was able to help you see that.
Yeah,
you know, it's amazing how much one person can do for your life that changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, you have a path going this way, he comes along, and now you're going that way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say even, you know, you hear a lot of these heroic stories of somebody coming from nothing or having a very traumatic or abused childhood and persevering through that to become this great success. And then the other contrasting side of that is you have people that it is in their pedigree, like that's what's expected of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have one side that says, well, look where I came from. How could I not want more for myself? And then the other side that says, well, look where I came from. How could I not expect great things from myself?
Yeah.
And I think I represent like the most vanilla, neutral. I didn't have a really poor, bad upbringing. It was just normal.
Yeah.
And I certainly didn't have that family that said, no, we expect this from you. I am definitely the black sheep in my family, especially when it comes to my ambition level. I don't know if anybody in my family will ever understand where that comes from. But for all intents and purposes, I grew up very, very bland, like vanilla, normal. And so I think that is most people. And I think that it's okay, right? It's okay to just have that ambition to say, okay, well, maybe where I grew up from was really normal, but I have big dreams and I do want to create success. And part of that, I think, is being American these days. We all want success and whatever that represents.
That American dream.
Yeah. And I think, but another part of it too, is to say, even though my childhood wasn't like awful. It was great. I still want my boys to have a higher bar where they say, you know what? I want to do more even than my dad did. And I want to create that success. And I always tell people, we talk about that fork in the road where it's like, I could have made a lot of decisions. I've had a lot of forks in the road where I said, you know what? This feels good. This is success in most people's eyes. I'm just going to do more of this and I should be happy with that.
Yeah.
Everyone else is proud of me. I should be happy with that. Right. But at the end of the day, there is that whisper in my mind that says, yeah, but what about like all your potential and what you could do?
Yeah.
And are you actually pursuing that?
Yeah.
Because one day my boys hopefully will come to me with a fork in the road and they'll be like, hey, Dad, these are my options. What should I do? And I'm either going to have the experience of saying, hey, this is what I wish I'd have done. This is what I think you should do. Or I'm going to say, hey, this is what I did. This is why it was awesome. Let me show you how to do it. And I would just rather the second one.
Yeah. Well, have you ever heard of David Goggins before?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've heard the story, but there's that story where he talks about like my worst nightmare is like I go to God and he shows me this like film of a life. And he talks about how like that was your life, about your potential. That was who you're supposed to be. And he didn't live up to that potential. And he talks about how he felt terrible in that moment. And that's what he's chasing that potential and he knows he can do more. And that's exactly what you've done, right? Yeah, you could be fine with doing this, but you know that there's something else out there for you, something better.
Yeah, it's almost like a relentless pursuit because only you really truly know that.
Yeah.
You know, other people will tell you, oh, you've got so much potential, you're meant for these great things, but only you really know if you're doing the best you can do. Like truly.
Yeah. Mm.
So I do think it's important. And when you settle, I think it shows up in different ways in your life where you're like, it may show up in your finances. It may show up in your happiness, depression, anxiety, things like that. When you're not pursuing what you know you could be doing.
Yeah. Your subconscious starts to kind of pull through of, hey, you're not living the life that you need to be.
Yeah.
Something needs to change. Right.
Right.
So you said you were in the Air Force for like 11 years,
yep.
11 years. So you met your mentor, then what happened? What did you do?
Well, I was a government contracted employee. So all I was left with was a gap between the life I wanted to live and what was left on my contract.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I spent another about 4 years in the military.
Okay.
And during that time, I was making as much of a massive investment into myself as I could. All my leave time was spent on going to leadership seminars and summits and reading books. And one thing that was extremely valuable to me was that my mentor Clinton had told me was, you got to start reading. And I finished high school like a third grade reading level, not because I was incompetent, but because I just never cared to be good at it. And so, he had asked me how many books are you reading every year right now? And, I'd never finished a book in my life.
like
why awesome. Would anybody spend time doing that? Sounds like
that was high school. We don't have to do that anymore.
Like, yeah, I'm done. I didn't do it then. And, but he changed the way I thought about reading and made it more of an investment into me. And so, you know, he gave me 3 or 4 book recommendations. And I started with, of course, How to Win Friends and Influence People, because I consider myself a pretty good communicator now, but I was a little abrupt in those days, naturally a very type A direct person.
Yeah, that's exactly how he was when I first met him. He was like, first day, he's like, so we're gonna get married or we're not. I'm like, wow, okay, I know who you are. So yeah, I totally understand what you're saying, is that's who he used to be. Kind of love
right
it, but
well, and to my wife Chandra has helped me soften my edges a little bit too. And there's been plenty of scenarios where she's been able to coach me up after we've, you know, met or left a dinner date or something, and she'd be like, hey, you know, when you said that thing, that probably didn't actually come off the way you thought it did. It sounded really mean.
That happens all the time. She's like, that was so rude. And I was like, I thought that was really polite, like how I said it. And she's like, no.
Yeah.
Oh, my old man. only your wife or your spouse can tell you those things. Really.
Right.
Like, yeah. I don't know who else could have said those things. That's why it's really helpful to have, a spouse that supports you.
Absolutely. Well, and they also know more of your intention, right? Yeah. So they can say, hey, I saw it from the outside looking in, and I know you, and this is probably what you meant.
Oh,
and you're like, oh, yeah, that's what I meant. And they're like, that's not what it sounded like.
That's exactly like, seriously, that happened on Sunday, too. Like, I'm just like, whenever he says something, I'm like, I know what you mean, but you didn't say that. And he's like, I totally did. I'm like, no, you didn't. You didn't say that. So let's, I get that.
So I had a lot of work to do in just communicating and connecting with people. And so that really helped me while I had those years in the military to learn that probably, as some would argue, like the most valuable business skill to have is to connect with people. And that helps you in leadership. It helps you in sales. It helps you in anything where you need to influence people. And so I dove into that. I read How to Win Friends and Influence People, and that really was like the biggest aha moment. You know, I hate that I was 25 years old before I realized that you can actually learn something from reading, but it really was that profound for me. And I read 36 books the year I met Clinton, and
It
changed so much about my life.
Or like fiction, nonfiction.
I've still never read a fiction book other than to my kids. It's all been
nonfiction. That's really hard to do. 36,
Well, for me, it was just this like almost like alchemy, where it was like, hey, here's this person who has like this completely undeveloped brain that has skills in, you know, in aviation mechanics, but otherwise pretty undeveloped. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to see the change. My wife saw the change. My work saw the change. And so it almost became like a, I don't want to say an addiction, because that's not really right, but it became really addictive to see that progress in myself. And my family saw it, everybody, my parents, and it was amazing to see the change in people and how they responded to me as I was growing and building myself. And so, although I'm not a formally educated person, I have more certificates and certifications than I care to mention. Not sure why, I just end up with them. And, but I do spend a tremendous amount of time to this day, reading and trying to educate myself. And I've also learned that once you get to a point of education, it almost, you kind of hit like a saturation point, mm-hmm. like you would in marketing, where you can spend as much as you want and you're not going to get a better return.
Yeah.
You kind of get that way with the amount of information you can take in as well, until you actually go out there and get your butt kicked and start like getting the wisdom of
experience. Actually applying those things that that you've been studying about for so long.
Right. And so I kind of felt like I hit that when I was in the military, where it was like, okay, I know everything I need to know. I need to get started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where sales came in to like really be my first like school of hard knocks.
So you had to wait until your contract ended.
Right.
So you worked for 4 more years unwillingly, you would say.
Willingly.
I mean, it was probably a little bit hard for you to just keep going, even though you had better ambitions. But anyways, 4 year ends. And you go into sales.
Right.
And you're able to actually finally apply those 4 years of knowledge. How did that feel when you were like, I remember reading this, and now I can actually apply it to what I'm doing? That was probably a really cool feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I got chills just now because I'm reminiscing on that time. And one thing to the point you guys were talking about too is, when you start developing yourself personally and professionally, if your environment is not keeping pace with that, like mine was not in the military, loved my time in serving my country, loved the people I worked with, but I had started to very quickly outgrow my environment. And that can be a pretty unhealthy thing, to create that gap, that dissonance between your environment and where mm-hmm. you're going as far as your development goes. And I think it's one of the things I teach on all the time, is if you're a company, make sure that if you want to attract high-performing people that are growing and developing and becoming better every day, you have to also do that as an organization,
yeah.
or they're going to outgrow your company and they're not going to feel like they should be there anymore. On the contrasting side of that, if your company is growing and developing and building up and someone in your organization is not, it'll become very clear that they are not a good fit for where the organization is going as well. Yeah. And so that harmony is super important. But it did create issues while I was in the military because you hear of like this fixed entity of the military that is what it is, been in, set in its ways for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm running a mile a minute trying to get better every day. And so it was a little bit challenging. But yeah, so I jump into the sales world and I went 2 months in sales, my first 2 months in sales, and I barely sold a thing.
What was it?
It was, so I was selling houses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for one of the nation's bigger home builders.
Okay.
And I went, the first month didn't sell anything. Second month, I sold 2 houses, which was quota. That was like their minimum.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, well, at least I'm not getting cut this month.
Yeah.
But I felt like it was just not happening. And then I can remember in 1 week, I sold 7 houses.
Oh my gosh.
That was in month 3 for me. And what I realized was that it just, that whole principle of what the success you feel today is from work you did probably 60, 90 days ago. Mm-hmm. And I started to realize how true that was. And the follow-up that you're doing in the investing and the touch points and the relationship building you're doing with your pipeline, how much that really will affect your coming months. And so...
So you're just a new guy selling 7 houses. And
yeah, made a lot of enemies.
I was going to say, other people be like, what is this guy doing?
It didn't help. Okay, so it didn't help that I had joined in the company the quarter that they had started their annual sales competition and only ran for 1 quarter.
Okay.
And I won it my first quarter there. So I created a few enemies. Yeah. They're like, this kid who knows nothing about sales, been in the military for over a decade, just, won. And typically you would have to split that bonus with your entire sales team.
Oh,
and
you didn't have anyone.
But I was by myself.
Oh, nice.
So I got the whole thing to myself.
They were even like, more like, oh my gosh.
So you got a big bonus for it.
Yeah.
How much was the bonus?
It was like 12 grand.
Oh, are you serious?
Oh yeah. I felt like
that's
I was
awesome.
Rich. I felt like I was king of the world, right? Because I go from making, 50 grand in the military after a decade. And I'm like, holy smokes.
Yeah, the bonus as well.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even include the commissions you made on...
Exactly.
Selling all that. That's so cool.
But you also have to realize, too, between getting out of the military, I left the military with nothing but a real estate license. And I spent 4 months on a hardcore struggle bus. I was not prepared to leave the military financially. I was struggling in the military financially because my wife was a stay-at-home mom, and it's a lot to support a family on that income.
Oh, yeah.
And so when I left the military, I was selling my plasma. I was trying to take odd jobs. I was doing anything and everything I could to make ends meet until I started working for the home builder. Mm. And so to go from like 60 or 90 days prior selling my plasma to buy groceries to winning that sales competition, it was a big reassurance to me of all the investing I'd done to myself in the years prior that, okay, it is worth it. It does pay off. You just have to stay committed.
Yeah, that reminds me of what's the movie with Will Smith and how he like,
Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah, Pursuit of Happiness, where he's just like, that last day when he finally gets it, it's like, oh my gosh, you don't even know what I had to do to get here, all this stuff, the crap that I had to go through. Yeah.
And that was my Pursuit of Happiness too. I mean, I that was the first year I made 6 figures, and it was just so rewarding to give that kind of, financial reward to my family and my wife. And to, we had always done a good job. We kind of followed, I'll say loosely followed Dave Ramsey's principles because I'm not nearly as good as I should be on that stuff. But we had paid down debt and tried to keep it as minimal as possible so that when we did start earning some good money, we were able to actually feel it and didn't have to dig out really too much of anything. And it was really rewarding for sure.
Yeah, that's so cool. So how long did you work selling homes? How long did you do that for?
So I did that for 3 years. And, three amazing years. I just knew that I wasn't always going to sell. As much as I enjoyed selling and the relationships, I knew that I just love business. I love business operations. And a lot of what I did in the military was very operational. And so I was always finding myself having an opinion about how everything should be done different on an operational standpoint, mm-hmm. to the point where everybody was like, oh, of course you have an opinion about how this should be done.
Yeah, you know? Okay.
And so,
but you can't really do too much about it because it's military and it's,
yeah.
it's set in its ways. Yeah, that makes sense.
Or even in sales, you know, you see things and you're like, why don't we do this? Or why don't we do that? And you kind of get to the point where, you know, you frustrate people to the point where they're like, well, if you think you should do it better, you do it. And so that's basically
what you did,
what I did. Yeah, so my next role was as an operations VP at a large real estate brokerage. And that's where I really got to harmonize my experience from the military and the operational side, and then in home building and sales on the real estate side. And things really started to take off and be a lot of fun because I felt like I was working in my strength finally, and I could apply the business knowledge I had to the experience I had in real estate and continue to learn some tough lessons, but it accelerated my business growth a lot.
I feel like that's how most, I would say, managers or COOs or even CEOs come about, is they all start in sales. You got to start in sales. You got to learn how to sell. Got to get your feet on the pavement and sell. But the difference between people who end up managing companies and people who just stay salesmen are the ones who it's like, I'm not going to do this forever. Like you said, you felt it. When I was in sales, I felt it too. I was like, I'm not going to sell forever. I know this. I know eventually I will be so good to the point where I'll have so much more potential I need to get. And so for you, it was, you started selling, okay, this isn't going to, I'm not going to do this forever. But then your next position was the freaking vice president. That's fantastic. That's cool. And I think that's how a lot of sales people should think of, this isn't my career. What is this going to teach me to do? Because the sales is the number one skill you can learn for any career in the world. I mean, you take Elon Musk, you take Jeff Bezos. The reason why they're the richest men in the world is because they could sell themselves better than anyone else could. That's it. It's not, I mean, obviously they're insanely intelligent people, right? But they were also able to communicate that. And that's why they are where they are. Yeah. And so salespeople need to learn that. Once you gain the skill of sales, the sky's the limit. You can become the vice president of a huge company, which is what you did. So that's cool you're able to realize that and then apply it and make it happen.
Right. Yeah, and I'll say too that if you don't have a background in sales and you're trying to operate a company, you're going to have a very difficult time understanding the importance of sales and how that integrates to a company growing. Because, you know, people like myself that tend to be more operational heavy and love to geek out on financial figures and numbers and data and margins and those things, which I can geek out with the best of them on that stuff. What happens is you tend to do it almost at the expense of sales. And, you know, if you spend all your time making sure everything's perfect operationally and neglect the sales and marketing side, you end up with a really neat pile of nothing. And so to prioritize, although we talk about the three major pillars to business, which is sales and marketing, finance and operations. Although there are three integral pillars to business, they don't have the same priority at all times. There's going to be a time where financially it has to be a priority. There's going to be a time where operationally it's hurting you so bad that if you don't fix it, it's just going to cause compounding issues. But most of the time, the emphasis needs to be on sales and marketing because that allows the margin of error for the other two.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You can screw everything up operationally and everything up financially if there's a big enough margin coming in from sales and marketing.
Yeah, I just read that yesterday. Alex Ramosi says, like, I should have, like, not been where I am, but I was so good at selling and so good at marketing that it was just like, I never got the go to jail card. It just, like, Monopoly, he just kept going because of the sales and marketing.
So. Yeah, and I think that there's so many incredible entrepreneurs out there with these brilliant ideas that you'll never know about because they don't know how to sell.
Yeah, they or can't sell you their ideas.
They may even know how to sell. They just don't put enough priority on it so that they're not spending enough time doing it every day. And so they'll spend more time trying to figure out how to launch the perfect CRM to create, like, optimize their operations and their time between jobs or whatever that is. They'll spend so much time doing that instead of getting the jobs to optimize.
Yeah.
And it's because that's what they're comfortable doing. And so I do believe that more entrepreneurs are operationally savvy than we hear about, but we don't hear about them because the ones we hear about are the ones that
put themselves out there that can sell themselves. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So when you're in this new position, how long did you stay there?
So that was a pretty short season. I spent a year there, and I ended up just deciding that for me personally, I just wanted to move out of the real estate space for a little while. I felt like there was so much growth that came from that role, but my passion was more for business than it was for real estate. And I want to be around an environment that's outpacing me, that I can grow.
Yeah.
That's going
to, you don't want to be the smartest person in the room.
Right. And I don't know that I even was there, but I wanted to be surrounded by people that just made me feel like, dude, if you don't grow, you're not going to make it. Yeah. And so I did some independent consulting and advising in the business world, had a lot of fun, ultimately got picked up to run a collection of trades companies in plumbing and HVAC. And one thing that was huge for me in that role was just realizing that although each industry is going to have nuance, where you're going to have to learn how it goes, if you can successfully create profitable companies and make them scalable, so much of it is transferable across industries, whether it's a product, a service, a subscription, whatever that is, it's very transferable. You know, understanding margins and really simplifying business to realize that it truly is as simple as having a product, service, or subscription base that adds value to people that they see worth paying for. Being able to articulate that value and manage the money so you don't go broke. Like, that really is all business in its simplest form. And to make it more complicated than that is probably one of the biggest Achilles heels of business, is they try to make it more complicated than it really is. And that was just a huge learning curve for me in that role to be a COO in the executive suite and realize that it is all so similar, that you can apply these principles and help a company grow. And that company grew while I was there over the term I was there, 46%, which is really to say, okay, what you do in one industry that's successful is transferable to other industries. Mm-hmm. Although you do have to apply the nuances of that industry. Yeah. Success is success. And it does transfer pretty well.
So you were at that company, you know, managing a few different trades companies, and now you started your own.
Right.
And go ahead and tell us a little bit about this new business startup that you have.
Yeah, so this is a brand new company, very close, near and dear to me. And I think at some point, this may not be it for everyone. Again, this is another one of those instances where most people from the outside looking in would be like, well, why wouldn't you just stay in the C-suite and make good money and...
As an executive
and build companies. And I think sometimes it makes me feel a little crazy that is something that I'm not just content with. But ultimately, I just have a burning desire to build something of my own. And I love helping other people create success. Anybody who knows me well knows that I love to help people create amazing things. But I just feel like, you know, I'm in my mid-30s now. I feel like it's time to call my own number. And I just want to build something that I can really, again, like going back to our earlier conversation of like, see what my potential is. Like, how far can I go with something and create something that my boys, you know, hopefully will have some proximity to learn with and from, and free up a little bit more flexibility in my schedule to prioritize them when it makes sense to. I know starting a company is not necessarily something you do if you want more free time, but a little bit more flexibility in my schedule is something I do want.
Yeah. And eventually, I mean, hopefully if you do it right, or if you push long enough, you'll get there and you'll be able to have that flexibility in this business.
Right.
Yeah. And that's exactly how it was for me too. I mean, I was a sales guy for 4 years, you know this, and I had a burning desire that I wanted to grow something for myself.
Yeah.
And the coolest part about it is, even though you're working more hours, right, you now have the leverage of it all being yours versus working for someone. You're just working for your salary. You're working for your pay. You're not working for growth. You're not working for you. And so it's like you have 100% more leverage over yourself than you did before. And even though you're working more hours, you're essentially working 100 times harder than you were before. That's the coolest part that made me realize about, you know, starting your own company is, in order to build growth and give yourself the leverage of being able to invest in yourself, is the way to go.
Yeah. Well, it's also a different drive and a different motive and motivation when you know there's a lid on your potential, because no matter what, and I get this as well as anyone from a corporate standpoint, you can only compensate people so well to secure the financial health of the company. Mm-hmm. Sales may be, there may be certain exceptions there, if anywhere, you know, you can make great money. A couple hundred thousand dollars a year for a good salesperson should be the norm. I know some make much more than that. And you should be compensated that if you're bringing in great revenue, in my opinion. And, but there's still always going to be a limit to what you personally can accomplish, right? There's only so much time in the day.
Yeah.
And there's also a limit to what it can cost effectively make sense for that company to compensate. And so it is different. You know, I think, we just launched this company and I went the first 3 weeks without really taking time off at all, which I didn't really realize until, you know, my wife pointed it out and she's like, you should stop.
Hey, I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah.
Where have you been?
Yeah, working 12, 14 hour days, but it's like, you know what? I'm having a blast. You know, I'm having so much fun. And the company's Junkaway Idaho, shameless plug there. And it is probably the least sexy, attractive business that you could get into. I mean, I'm in the trash business.
Trash. You're hauling junk.
I'm hauling junk off,
you're the
right?
Junk guy.
But you know what's fun is it is a really fun business. You know, we did a demo last week. I just had a blast to just get into the trenches and grind and, you know, blow a customer's mind and make them super happy with the company and hopefully secure that future business. But just to be working on something that is mine, that I am starting from scratch. And what's kind of ironic and weird is that I have a ton of business experience now in growing companies to help them go from 5 million to 10 million to whatever their goals are. But I don't have any experience in being the only employee, the only owner, and starting from nothing but the contacts in my phone. And so I am on a tremendous learning curve right now.
Sure.
You know, you would assume I would know everything to do all the time, but I'm learning everything for the first time right now. And I love that challenge where it's like, okay, here's something I don't know how to do. Let's see if I can figure it out.
Yeah, and you can apply everything that you've already learned to this, but there's still more things. And I think that's, you know, a scary thought for a lot of people is, I mean, no matter what you do, when you do something new, there are going to be challenges that are new and you're not going to know everything. And that is okay. It's okay to fail. It's okay to feel like you have no idea what you're doing, because eventually, like, I mean, someone has felt that before. Jeff Bezos has felt that. Elon Musk has felt that. You name it. And all these highly developed companies that you work for, they were all where you're at now. But what's the difference between you and them, right? They just worked and they've done it for a really long time and they just kept pushing. They never stopped.
Yeah. And they just figured it out. I think that phrase, it can sound very bullyish sometimes in the business world where somebody's like, just figure it out, right? But the reality is it's very hard for most entrepreneurs to continue to connect with their people the bigger the companies grow, because every step of the way they've had to figure it out. And if they haven't, they've had somebody there that was willing to just figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes it can cause a great dissonance and a divide between entrepreneurs and their staff as they grow their companies. And the people they hire to bring on in their companies are never going to be like them. They're going to have some similarities. Hopefully they'll think, you know, with the business best interests in mind, and they'll start to understand the big picture. But one of the things that I see that's so harmful with entrepreneurs, especially in being a second in command, as I have been in the past, is the business owner, the entrepreneur, loses touch with what the motives and motivation of the staff are, because they've had to grind it out and do whatever it takes for so long. They expect that from their staff.
Yeah. And at the cost of getting this super successful company, whereas an employee, they're not getting that reward, you know?
Exactly.
The cost and reward is totally different.
It's totally different. But they'll lose touch with that at times. And so what happens is they create this, I pay you, so you owe me mentality versus you're serving my company and I'm serving you. And it's a, instead of having a very harmonic relationship, it's a divide where they don't see the similarities between them and their staff anymore. And they see it as, you weren't there when I was eating ramen. You weren't there when I went for three Christmases without being able to get my kids anything nice. Yeah. You weren't there for all that. You'll never understand what it takes to, you know, be a big asset to this company. And I pay you this, so you better perform X. And that becomes the mentality that gets adopted far more than I did whatever it takes so that I will have this thing because I chose to do that. And I'm going to bring people around me that to support this thing that we're building, and they're going to add value to my organization in direct proportion to the value that my organization adds to them.
Yeah.
And understanding that that truly is their motives and motivation. They want to be loyal. They want to work for a company that is going to value them. They want to be heard. They do have ideas of how to do things. And if you'll reward that development and you'll reward that loyalty in a way that's going to be healthy for them to understand more about business, and you'll teach them and develop them and grow them, they're never going to be you. And that's okay. Yeah. You don't need them to be. You need them to be the best at what they do, right? And so, you know, there's a lot of companies that hold themselves back as soon as they realize that they can't do any more personally. They don't bring in people in their weaknesses to say, you know what, I'm really, really vested in sales and marketing, but I'm not the best at sales and marketing.
Yeah.
I know what it should look like. I know what numbers we need to hit, but I need to go find somebody that's a better seller than me. I need to go find a better marketer than me. I need to go find a better operator, a better leader, a better mentor to our people, whatever that is, and say, how do I bring that person in to accelerate the company's growth? Because I can't do it all. And then they don't make the transition from, I guess I'll use music as an analogy. They never make the transition from being the head violinist in their company to being the conductor.
Yeah.
And you have to realize that until you're willing to put the violin down, you will never be the one that knows how to conduct the whole orchestra.
And sometimes that's hard.
That's so hard.
I mean, as someone who is a perfectionist, sometimes I see, I mean, I use my husband as an example, him doing something, him cleaning. And I know that I can do it better, but I don't have the time to, you know, if we're cleaning the house together, I don't have the time to sit there and just teach him how to do it or to just monitor every move. And sometimes it's hard to just be like, you made a mistake, that's okay. And to move on and let him be able to do things. It's not easy.
That's why I just pay people to clean them. That way she can't judge me on it.
Well, it is extremely hard. And I think that's where a lot of people make a mistake is they stop trying. It's going to be hard every single time. It's going to be hard to give up being the person that closes the big accounts. It's going to be hard to give up the person that monitors the operating expenses.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to give up every single one of those things. And you will expect perfection and be let down almost every single time. But the reality is if somebody can do it 90% as good as you, and you can focus on bringing in things that are going to grow the company, if you have everything operating at 90% without you, it's better than one or two things operating at 100% with you.
Yeah, but you performing 100% in what you were doing.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Doing the things that only you can do should be the priority. So, but then once you realize that your job is actually to be the conductor, then you can actually try to step back and see how everything actually sounds.
Yeah.
Because you can see, okay, I know where sales and marketing should be, the violinists or whatever. I know where that should be. Let me make sure that it's on track, or let me teach, develop, train, and add value to that. And then you know what? They're not really jiving well with the operational side of things. That might be whatever your brass section. And let's develop this brass section and actually probably educate them on what the violinists are doing a little bit so they know how it should sound together. And you spend time doing that when you zoom out a little bit to see the perspective of the whole thing, and you end up making a bunch of really nice music.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. You touched on something that I actually am struggling with right now as well, which is trying to just figure out what to do. You know, like you said, the hardest part about being an entrepreneur is there's not a paved path for you to follow. You're paving it. You know, we're paving it. That's what we're doing. And to tie it back into music, you have to write the music now. You're writing the music. You're writing the parts for the violinist. You're writing the parts for the brass. You know how it sounds when it's right. You know how it sounds when it's wrong. And so for you specifically and your new in Junkaway, Idaho, what have been like some big things that you've had to figure out along the way to actually make it feel like you're going on the right path?
Yeah, well, I certainly can't speak like well-seasoned, got this down like perfect.
Yeah, one day we'll have another interview and you'll be like, okay, yeah, scratch this. Yeah, this yeah, is
that,
it.
That was terrifying. But, yeah. But you know, the reality is, especially in the early stages, in wearing all the different hats, and you and I have talked about this too, and just getting really good at taking off one hat and putting another one on. And I think that your transition time between those acts, it speeds things up greatly. If you can say, okay, I need to actually take my sales hat off and go actually execute on something and take that hat off and put the other one on, and then take that hat off and be like, oh yeah, I need to actually be a dad right now and put my dad hat on when I need to be a dad and put my husband hat on when I'm out on a date with my wife, and get to where you can exchange those hats quicker and compartmentalize that to a point, I think the easier it is for you to actually say, okay, what is important right now and how can I be present in doing that? One of the biggest challenges just from a pure business standpoint is realizing if I'm not selling, nobody's selling. So every minute I spend executing on something I sold, which has to get done, yeah, I'm not selling. So right now I'm in the process of trying to figure out, okay, how do I continue the pipeline of sales and fulfill the promises I made when I sold? And that challenge right now is amazing, because the company's growing at a point where I've got stuff coming in at a great pace, but I take a week to do a job and then I spend the next week filling the pipeline. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
Spend that week executing the jobs.
Yeah, and by then, the time you get done with the job, then you don't have another job lined
phone's
up.
Phone's not ringing.
Then you got to find a new job. Exactly. You take a week finding that job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can
so,
see that.
So that's been a huge thing for me, which again, I love the challenge of it. And, you know, unfortunately, we do live in a world where there is not a whole lot of people that are willing to be accountable to show up for work. And so, gosh, I think last week alone, I had 5 people say they were going to show up and just didn't.
Oh, really?
No call, no show, no nothing.
Like, I'm ready to give you money. Let's go.
Love for you to show up and do this job. And so I think some of those growing pains before it's an established company that's going to have the appealing benefits and the, you know, the consistent opportunities to grow, and that in the beginning groundwork stages, without wanting to expand to have partnerships and things like that, to really truly want to bootstrap and build it on my own and say that I did build it from the beginning. That's probably one of the biggest challenges I have right now, is knowing that I'm selling, I'm executing, I'm operating, I'm also balancing the books, I'm also taking care of the finances, I'm also collecting payments and invoicing and doing every aspect to it, which I, like I said, I'm having a blast with it. But it, at me being a very, I don't want to overuse the word ambitious, we can say high strung. I want it happening way faster than it is. Yeah. And it's because I know it all can if I was only doing one of those things.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you're looking for some work.
You're looking for hats to fill.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what you're doing.
And, you know, the reality is, as much as I do enjoy sales, I know that I'm not going to be the best person to sell even my own company. I think I'll be the best person to sell it to itself, meaning sell
to
it
your employees.
The employees and sell it to the vision and building where the company is going to go. But to the consumer base, there's thousands and thousands of people that are going to be better salespeople than I am. And, you know, finding people that want to do that and are excited to help build something that is a little bit unknown, right? And it's junk removal, it's a trash business, right? But the potential is so amazing. And I believe we are in a world that new business is going to thrive, you know, over the next 10 years. I think in a lot of ways that it hasn't been able to for a while. And I think that to build something from the ground up right now, we're in an incredible time to do that. Yeah. I mean, because you can start a company for so inexpensive these days, virtually anyone. It's just how much are you willing to risk the security and the known, the security, all heavy, yeah. heavy quotes on that, but to go start something of your own.
Yeah. Well, I think it's been really interesting for you to interview you because you came from that security and now you're not. And I think that's a big jump that a lot of people are dealing with, that like, how would you know if you're ready to leave that security and go jump into something new?
Well, I will say, I don't think you're ever going to feel ready. And it isn't for everybody. You know, if you value the feeling of security that you feel right now and the predictability, I think you should be happy and content with that. If you value that more than the potential upside of going out and risking it for something on your own. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think we don't talk about that enough. We kind of have this hustle culture in mm-hmm. America right now, where if you're not the best at everything, you're not an entrepreneur, you're not a millionaire, you don't have an amazing house, you don't have a jillion followers on social media, that you can't be happy. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's a lie. You can be happy with whatever your picture of success is to you. And there are going to be plenty of people that value having a absolute 5-star marriage, and that being the 90% of what they value their success in, over any sort of monetary success that could ever exist. And I support them. I applaud them. I cheer them on. And I agree that that should be their priority. I just think, for me, if you know that you want to go create something, that it's there. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, since I was just a little kid, even I knew I was going to go create things. Like, I knew I was going to want to own things and be an entrepreneur in some capacity. I mean, I was a weird little kid, like 6 years old, drawing pictures of Rolls Royces and stuff in New Plymouth, Idaho.
Yeah.
So I've always been a little weird on that side. So it's been a burning desire for me for a long time. But there are ways for you to prepare to actually go do that, that are going to give you a better chance of success. I've had other ventures that I've launched in the past that I wasn't ready for. I may have been ready for them mentally, mm-hmm. but I hadn't actually prepared my finances. I didn't have operating expense. I didn't have savings. My wife wasn't as much supportive because of some of those things. Mm-hmm. And for me, launching this new company, launching this new venture, the Are You Ready? It kind of is a meeting of things that are put upon you that say, you know what, maybe I should go this direction, and saying, okay, well, I've always wanted X, Y, Z. And you know what, I'm actually prepared financially. I have the network of people. I have the knowledge. I have enough experience. I'm going to thrust myself into this, and it still may not work 3, 4, 5, 10 times. And that's just the reality of entrepreneurship. It is hard. Mm-hmm. But just knowing that if you're willing to do that, and you're willing to put yourself out there continually, and you actually get better. I love John Maxwell, as you guys both know. Mm-hmm. The phrase he says, that experience isn't the best teacher. Evaluated experience is the best teacher. To be able to say that and say, you know what, that didn't work. I got my butt kicked on that. I don't want to feel that again. Yeah. How do I get better? How do I make sure that doesn't happen again? And then say, okay, let me reapproach with more experience. I've launched businesses in the past that didn't work. And the ability to say, okay, this is what my finances should look like. This is what my relationship with my wife should look like. This is what my prioritization of sales should look like. This is how much time I should be investing into these things. And say, okay, let's take another stab at it now. I think that really is the closest you can get to knowing that you're ready.
If you're ready, yeah. Yeah, well, that was really great insight for a lot of people. You know, you've already experienced it, like you have. You know how much better you are now going into it than you were before.
Yeah. And I think I heard this on Alex Hormozi's podcast recently, too, that, and I'm going to butcher it, and it's going to be, we're going to say paraphrased at best.
Okay.
That a man never steps in the same river twice, because it's not the same river. Yep. And you're not the same man. And I feel that way with entrepreneurship. That really resonated with me, because every time you go to start again, another venture, you feel like it's the same river and you feel like you're the same man. And you wonder, how can I overcome it? I got my butt kicked last time. I'm afraid it's going to happen again. But you have to stand confident on the things that you've done in between then and now to make sure that it's not the same river, because reality is it's never the same river. And you're certainly not the same man, that you've invested in stuff, you've educated yourself, you learned from the last time you got washed downstream and you say, okay, I'm going to do better and I'm going to make progress. And even if I don't find my way to the destination I'm looking for, I'm going to have so much more success than I had last time going off the back of the things I failed at in the past.
And so much more growth too. Like, you're going to be a different man if this thing ends, or if it goes on to become super successful and whatever you decide to do with it. Yeah, we wish you the best at Junk Away, Idaho. I'm excited. I like the yellow. I think the yellow.
That's all my life.
Yeah, he'll have to show you too. He has, are you going to get the yellow camo?
Yeah.
You still planning on doing
that? Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the most obnoxious camo. It's like yellow and gray and black, and it's just obnoxious, but I think something artistic about it. But to me, it's a branding move where it's like a more maybe marketing move to where it's easily identifiable. Mm-hmm. And that's really the strategy there. But yeah, the yellow, I thought, you know, I don't have a background in marketing. I know how marketing should perform in a company, but I'm not a marketer. And so I talked to a friend of mine who's one of the best that I know in that world. And he's like, just make your name super obvious and make your colors stand out. And it's like, oh, well, doesn't get much more obvious than Junk Away, Idaho. I don't really have to explain what that is. And yellow's pretty disarming. So here we are.
yeah, I like it. So with you starting your junk company, I'm sure you probably had a lot of other thoughts of other companies you could have started, because there's so many opportunities out there to make money. And I think specifically with like our generation and how social media betrays it is like, you have to get into some sort of internet something, right, to make money. But you chose junk, right? Hauling away junk.
Yeah.
And which is awesome. But why did you choose to do that?
Right. So for me, it's less about the vehicle, more about the destination. I think a lot of people just like me have a list in their phone of all these business ideas that one day you're like, I'd love to do all these things. And I think every single one of them in my phone is probably more appealing than a junk removal company.
Touching people's dirty old stuff that you have to get rid of.
You start ripping out some carpet in someone's house and you start to wonder, you know, is this really what I wanted to do? but truthfully, it's understanding business to a point to say, okay, what is the potential here? What does a performa look like for this? What's the market demand? And understanding scale. You know, a junk removal company is very easily scalable. And so for me, I looked at the potential financial side of it. I kind of analyzed what that would or should perform at. There's a great book, I think it's called Personal MBA. I think we've talked about it a little bit, Benj. And talks about taking away the biggest risk that you have in starting a company, which is not knowing if there's a demand for it. Well, I don't have to wonder if there's a demand for junk removal. There's a lot of great, very successful companies in that space that do a good job. All I have to wonder is, can I do it at their level or better, and, you know, communicate that value to people? So I saw a company that's scalable, relatively low turnover cost, because there's not a lot of training, not a lot of skilled labor. And I looked in my phone and started scrolling through and realized probably 90% of the people in my phone already are people that can send me business. And that's not necessarily true with all the other fun ideas that I have. And so I think it's a combination of things. But the biggest thing is realizing that it's not necessarily there to be the biggest national junk removal company that will ever exist. I can almost promise you it'll never be that. I want to create a company where people want to work, that's serving its community, but ultimately is going to generate a lot of revenue to give me financial opportunities to pursue the other fun things that are in my
phone.
So to me, I want to build an amazing company that's very healthy, that's providing a great service that people really love to work for. A company that I would want to work for, but it's a means to, you know, having resources. I wanted to build a cash cow so that I can fund the things that are fun and I can have a little bit more freedom and time to You know, I've got a book that I've been working on for a while. I've got other speaking engagements that I really enjoy to do. I've got teaching opportunities where people would like me to come teach areas of business in their companies that I often have to say no to, that I would love to say yes to if I had that cash cow. So again, just more about the destination than the vehicle for me. And I know the service business well, and how to grow a service company. So I think it is important when you look at what you want to start to kind of remove yourself and your personal identity from what I'm starting being a reflection of who I am, and say, what's the point of it? What results am I expecting this to give me in return? And what is it going to provide that's worth value to somebody else? Because it's less about my personal identity.
Yeah, being labeled as a junk man or a garbage man, right? And more about where you're going. And at the end of the day, like, who's going to remember that you ripped out their carpet or that, you know, that.
And I think, honestly, I don't want to sound like a martyr in this way, but like, there's something really like artistic and humbling going from a COO to a garbage man. And I think that for me in this season of my life too, I can appreciate and value the company being built on my own back in a blue collar way. Going back to the roots of my foundation of who I am as a person and just going out there and getting dirty and working and providing a service for people and getting paid in return. There's just something that's really almost therapeutic about that for me right now after coming from high pressure roles where you're responsible for a tremendous amount of results and things for other people.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for everything you've shared. I have one last question for you. I don't know if you have any other as well. My question is, so you went from an executive probably making upwards of 150, 200 grand a year salary, right? So up there to no promise, no security, none of that, down to essentially zero, right? So what advice would you have for an employee right now who is potentially thinking of doing that or someone who wants to do that in the future? What advice would you have for them?
I think if you're going to do something that is that gutsy, you have to know what you're trying to accomplish that you can't get through your current avenue. I also think that this is just my personal thoughts on it, that if I go earn a dollar for myself, there's far more security in that than being paid a dollar someone else earned for me through their company. And even if I earned half as many dollars, I went and made that money. No one else's company paid me that. I paid it. And I think if you're in a position where you are considering, first of all, realize it is freaking hard. It is hard. And it's harder and takes longer than you think it's going to. And you have to embrace the fact that it's going to be challenging and prepare yourself if you can before you go out and do something like that. Get some money into savings, get your debts paid down, sell things that you don't need to have debt on so that you can think more about how to build something than you are surviving. Because if you're surviving financially, you're never going to build the company you need to build. If you're married, you owe it to your spouse to have some sort of a buffer there that says, and you may come right out the gate and make really good money, and that's great. I applaud that. I really hope you do. But if you don't, your business venture is only going to last as long as you can survive financially. So you may have an incredible business idea, but it's going to tear you down so much emotionally to not have that succeed because you didn't prepare yourself financially. It's going to tear you down enough to where you may never even try again. And it could be an incredible idea and it could be wildly successful, but because you didn't prepare going into it, it didn't take off. You may have given up on it too soon. And so I also think that it's okay to build yourself while you're building someone else's company. Like we talked about with me, I invested in myself for years and years and years, almost a decade before I ever thought that I should go start my own thing. And so start today with investing yourself in what you think that it might take, because, and realize, the more valuable you are to the company you're working for, even though you may know that one day you're not going to do that anymore, the more valuable and more you can grow within the position you are in that company, the more it will help you in starting your own company. So it's not like this or that, like this company's holding me back and yada, yada, yada. It's just be the best you can be in that company. Benji, you are an amazing example of this. Be the best salesperson you can be. Be the best marketing person you can be. Grow the most, learn the most, add the most value that you can be, so that when the keys are in your hands, you can say, hey, I actually know quite a bit about this. I've learned a lot about this and I've gotten some great experience in this. And you're not going to know everything, but you'll know that.
At least you know one thing that you could be like, hey, loss fails, I can do this. I can be confident in this one thing.
Right.
Well, I really appreciate the advice you've given us today. I think there are so many little nuggets that if someone just catches a hold of one thing in this podcast, that it will really change their life. I think you provide a lot of different insights that I think a lot of entrepreneurs can hear from, and a lot of employees that want to be entrepreneurs or don't know if they want to can hear from, and they can really benefit. So I really appreciate you taking your time to be here today. I know you're wearing a lot of different hats, so I know that this is a hat that you're spending time on, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you so much, Will, for being here. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and go to Junk Away Idaho. Do you have a website?
Yep, junkawayidaho.com.
Yeah, junkawayidaho.com.
Use it for your junk. Haul your junk away and
get rid of that old couch that you want to get rid of and have your husband buy you a new one, right?
That's right.
Or carpet or anything.
Yep.
All right. So if you guys could all subscribe to our channel. Again, this is the Benjamin Saylor Show. And thanks, Will. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Will.